anyone who hates children and dogs can't be all bad.
The day war broke out, my missus looked at me and she said,
a handbag.
Yes, quote, unquote. Another edition of the quizzical quotation game devised and introduced by Nigel Rees.
Hello again, and thank you, Ronald Fletcher, who is here once more to read the quotations, and here to try and identify them this week. Anna Ford, Ian McKellen, Arthur Marshall, and the man recently nominated Radio Personality of the Year, the year, of course, being 1847, Terry Wogan.
My, how the weeks fly by, Nigel.
Well, we'll break ourselves in gently this week with a few catchphrases. Please tell me with whom you would associate them. Ronnie, can we have the first one for Terry Wogan?
Hiyo, Silver.
Away! I leapt to that instantly, didn't I? Giving me age away in one fell swoop. That has to be Kimo Sabe, the Lone Ranger.
Yes.
Which used to shout to the horse, who was Silver.
Yes.
Because Tonto was the Indian.
One
had to make the distinction between him, of course, and Hopalong Cassidy. They both wore white gloves, as indeed did Roy Rogers.
George Seton, who was the first Lone Ranger on American radio where it all started, invented the call Hi-Yo Silver because he was incapable of whistling to his horse. Interesting facts, friends. And from a later radio version, here's the opening sequence.
Horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty Hi-Yo Silver, the Lone Ranger.
Smashing, wasn't it?
Ah,
terrific.
Yeah.
There was a great tradition of those horses, of course. There was Champion, the Wonder Horse. Do you remember him?
Yeah,
no.
I do.
Yes. And thank you. Roy Rogers used to have a horse,
Trigger.
Too. Who? Trigger. Well, that's preserved in Aspic in Hollywood now,
it's
isn't it?
It's been stopped.
Pardon?
It's been stuffed.
I like my version better.
Ian McKellen, there are two possible answers to this question. Not so much a catch phrase as a catch noise. With whom would you associate...
Sorry, I'm still thinking about that.
With whom would you associate...
Boom, boom.
Boom, boom. It's that glove puppet, isn't it? And he's a fox, and he's called Basil Brush.
Yes.
Yes.
Where do you think he got it from?
It's the man who's crouching underneath the table all through the program, and I get worried about him. It's a terrible backache going boom-boom. It's presumably his voice as well as his hand,
indeed,
isn't it?
Yeah. Who else uses that phrase?
Well, Jimmy Tarbuck used it first, and I think it derives from the old music hall where somebody comes on, cracks a gag, and the drummer goes...
Yes.
Like that, just to show the gag is finished.
And
it goes back to the music hall.
Even more recently than Jimmy Tarbuck.
Is Jimmy Tarbuck a puppet? I didn't realize that. Who's got his hand up the back of Jimmy?
I was thinking of Morecambe and Wise, because here is Basil Brush obviously imitating Morecambe and Wise.
What do you think of it so far?
Roguish! Boom, boom!
Well, very short catchphrases this week. Anna Ford, don't take this personally.
Silly moo.
It's that wonderful Warren Mitchell, Alf Garnett, isn't it?
In
You know what?
Till death us do
part. Exactly, yes. On the tip of my tongue.
And here he is in action.
You are so prejudiced. You're against all foreigners. It's terrible.
I'm not talking about prejudice.
Of course you don't.
Now, look. See, look. Look, I've mixed with them. I'm mixed with foreigners.
Nothing against foreigners.
I fought alongside them in the war.
What I always say is...
worked alongside them.
If you're going to have foreigners, you've got to have foreign countries for them to live in.
I've always... Silly move.
Well, Arthur Marshall, I don't think you'll have any trouble recognising the show that this catchphrase came from. I also want to know the name of the character.
Good morning, how are you? As if I care.
Oh, my word. Itmar.
Yes. Now, can you remember the name of the character?
No. He sounded very foreign.
Welsh.
Welsh. A Welsh.
Welsh is fine.
No idea of the character.
He was named after a Welsh seaside resort where I used to spend my holidays. Ian?
No.
Colwyn Bay.
Colwyn Bay is a very good name for a character.
Samfair PG, no.
Well, almost. Samfair Fecken, named after Hanvirecken, which is near Bangor, where Itmar was recorded for part of the war.
Yeah.
Right. And so on to some lengthier quotations. Terry Wogan, with whom would you principally associate the phrase...
I cried all the way to the bank.
Ah. That's one of the great showbiz phrases. And it was in response to a critic. Or that's his response to critics. He cries all the way to the bank. Liberace.
Yes. Well done. And he says he's now bought the bank. Yes. 2 marks, Terry. Ian McKellen, I don't know how you feel about theatre critics, but which one of them said this about what show?
It's the sort of show that gives pornography a bad name.
nothing I was ever in, I'm delighted to say. It must have been old Calcutta, wasn't it?
Yes.
And it can't have been Kenneth Tynan, who, as well as being a theatre critic, was also the impresario on that occasion.
After it?
It's not Clive Barnes.
Yes, Clive Barnes, until fairly recently the drama critic of the New York Times. Well done. Have you had any strange things said about any of your performances?
The best thing about Ian McKellen's Hamlet was the curtain call. How about that?
That's rough.
Terry, have you ever been...
There was a marvellous quotation Mort Sahl made at Exodus, which was the movie of the setting up of the State of Israel. And it ran for about 4.5 hours. And about 3/4 of the way through, Mort Sahl stood up in the studio and said, "Let my people go!"
Anna Ford, talking of criticism, there's a technique much favoured by some critics, and more particularly by blurb writers, who draw invidious comparisons. Can you remember which book was promoted with these words?
A novel of today with a freshness and raw fury that makes room at the top look like a vicarage tea party.
No, I don't know, but I can only guess. I mean, it might be something like Couples by John Updike.
These things tend to sort of snowball, you know. It was the next novel on from Room at the Top.
Would it be, if I may?
Do.
Saturday Night and Sunday Morning.
Yes, by Alan Sillitoe. This was a phrase used in the Daily Telegraph review of the book, which was used on the cover of the paperback. Jolly good. I think Terry gets a mark there. Arthur Marshall, it's odd where some quotations turn up, even odder to learn where some of them originate. Take the one to be found in this song.
East is east and west is west, and the wrong one I have chose. Let's go where you keep on wearing those frills and flowers and buttons and bows, rings and things and buttons and bows. Don't bury me in this prairie, take me where the cement grows. Let's move down to some big town where they love a girl by the cut of her clothes, and I'll stand out in buttons and bows.
If you can disentangle from what John Inman was singing there, we don't want to know where buttons and bows came from, but east is east, west is west.
Oh, I think that's dear old Rum-ti-tum-ti-tum. By which I mean Rudyard Kipling.
Yes, why do you call him Rum-ti-tum-ti-tum?
Well, because it's all the verses sort of Rum-ti-tum-ti-tum, and it rhymes in a very jolly manner, you know, which people don't think of doing now.
Yes, indeed.
But was that the title of the poem? No.
No, it was It was in The Ballad of East and West.
Yes.
Well, now, the next four quotations all have something to do with royalty. Terry Wogan, do you know which king is supposed to have remarked,
"There will soon be only five kings left: England, diamonds, hearts, spades, and clubs."
Well, it sounds very like Edward the Seventh.
No.
But I bet it isn't. Was he English?
No.
This man, I thought he wouldn't be.
No.
It's not King Zog of Albania.
No, a bit further south.
I've always liked him.
A little bit further south.
King Umberto of Italy.
No.
Anybody? Am I going in the right direction?
Sort of. Zigzagging your way down.
Did he lose his throne?
Was he? Yes.
Farouk?
Yes, King Farouk of Egypt, of course. He's reported to have said this to Lord Boyd Orr, who didn't lose his throne. Ian McKellen, another monarch, had this to say. Which one?
"No crooked leg, no bleared eye, no part deformed out of kind, nor yet so ugly half can be as is the inward suspicious mind."
Is he an English one? Was he an English king of England?
You beg a question there by referring to he.
Ah. So we might think of a queen who writes verse, or wrote verse.
And you're not getting any help.
Wait a minute. Queen Anne, who sometimes counsel took and sometimes tay. No? No, I've no idea.
Since she's a Scot, is not Mary Queen of Scots?
No, it was Queen Elizabeth I. Anna Ford. Familiar phrase next, but where does it come from?
Monarch of all, I survey.
Was he English? Was
yes.
She English?
He was English.
He was. So probably Henry IV, part two or something.
So, Sadio, anybody? These words are written by William Cooper. They come from his verses supposed to be written by Alexander Selkirk, who was the original of Robinson Crusoe. And Ronnie has the whole verse.
"I am monarch of all I survey. My right there is none to dispute. From the centre all round to the sea, I am lord of the fowl and the brute. O solitude, where are the charms that sages have seen in thy face? Better dwell in the midst of alarms than reign in this horrible place."
And finally, Arthur Marshall, another of those phrases that are easily trotted out without the source being known.
"I'm to be Queen of the May, Mother. I'm to be Queen of the May."
"Oh, that's that one. If you're waking, call me early."
Yeah.
"Call me early, Mother dear. For tomorrow is the gladdest day of all the glad new year," or something or other. Is that the one?
Well, not quite.
Well, what do we have to guess now?
I'd like to know where that comes from. "I'm to be Queen of the May,
Mother." The May Queen. By?
Some queen or other.
Oh, Lord. Shelley.
Later. Bit of a peer.
Alfred Lord.
Alfred Lord.
Tennyson.
Yes, Alfred Lord Tennyson. Give you a mark there, Anna.
A lovely poem about a mother by little Anne Taylor, who ran to help me when I fell, and would some pretty story tell, or kiss the place to make it well, my mother.
Right, let's take a look at the score, and I can tell you that, way out in front this week is Terry Wogan. Now, this is where we let the panel reach for their quotation books and we forget about the quiz for a few minutes while we hear how they would use quotations to get over a particular problem. And it's this. What on earth do you write in somebody's visitor's book? If you've been staying with people, do you have a witty something which you always put in their book? Or if you've been staying in a hotel and they've left space for you to comment on your stay, what quote, complimentary or otherwise, would you use to describe the food or the accommodation? Who should we start with? Anna Ford.
Well, I must admit, I've never been asked to write anything except my name in anybody's visitor's book. But I can tell you that when I was a child, I was taken to tea in an extraordinary old, very ramshackle rectory, which had been taken over by two old aristocrats. We went into tea, and the tea was poured, and it appeared to be nothing but hot water. And then the food arrived, and the food was four pieces of blackened toast, and nothing else at all. And I think that if I had been able to write in their visitor's book at the age of five, I might have written something akin to what Anthony Powell wrote in one of his books called The Acceptance World. And I'm plagiarizing slightly, but I might have read, "Your tea was notable for its two dramatic features. The tea was a farce, and the toast was a tragedy."
Ian McKellen.
I was moved when I toured through Copenhagen recently and had some appalling food to write, "There's something rotten in the steak of Denmark." Boom, boom. Thank you. Yes. Or, but this is quite a good one from Clarence in Richard III by Shakespeare. When you've been woken up early by the chambermaid, which you always are in a house in this country tonight, and by the early morning lorries shaking the building. "Oh, I have passed a miserable night, that as I am a Christian faithful man, I would not spend another such a night, though 'twere to buy a world of happy days, so full of dismal terror was the time."
We must have a fairly big business book to write it in. Arthur Marshall?
What I write in visitors' books is that thing that starts, and that I finish it another way. "I shall pass through this world but once, and therefore, if there is anybody that I want to kick in the face, I had better do it now, for I shall not pass this way again."
Terry Wogan.
I mimed a quotation from Anthony St. John Hancock, written obviously by Galton and Simpson. And he made a marvelous comment that I think is worth bearing in mind if the food is rotten. "I used to think my mother was a bad cook, but at least her gravy moved about a bit."
The biggie there. Anyway, thank you, panel, and thank you to all those of you who've written into Quote Unquote, letting us know what your favourite sayings are. We picked a few more out of the many we've received. They've come from all sorts of listeners. How about this one?
"Dear sir, on the subject of quotations, my favourite must be, 'Stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage.'"
And those words by Richard Douglas were chosen by a prisoner who listens to us in Parkhurst Jail. No, really. The Reverend Margaret Smith of East Barnet sent us this.
"Many thanks for a most entertaining program."
No, Ronnie, lower down.
Sorry, yes. "If Moses had been a committee, the Israelites would still be in Egypt."
A remark by J.B. Hughes. And Jay Petty from Bradford writes,
"One of my favorite quotations comes from Noel Coward. When asked by an interviewer why he had champagne for breakfast, his immediate reply was, 'Doesn't everyone?'"
And two listeners sent us in this next remark by Tom Lehrer, Michael Rabin of Edgware and Mr. C.T. Chapman of Sydenham, both see a great deal in this philosophical quotation.
"Life is like a sewer. What you get out of it depends on what you put into it."
Well, thank you all very much, and more next week. Well, back to the quiz. And now we turn our attention to scrambled quotations. These are all, I assure you, well-known sayings, but they've been tempered with on purpose for comic effect. Terry Wogan, can you unscramble this and tell me who made the original remark?
"Oh, wad some power the gifty gears to see some people before they see us."
You old fox. You didn't fool me with that accent either. "What some power the gift..." What was that again?
What?
"The gears to see ourselves as others see us."
Yes.
Tommy Doherty, 1976.
Yes. But really, who said it?
It was Robbie Burns.
Yes, Robert Burns. Well, Mark, well done. 2 marks for you. Ian McKellen, you may spot 2 scrambled quotations in this masterpiece by C. Quill Smith, Balham's own bard.
"By country churchyard, ferny fen and muir, what quills mute, inglorious, lies buried here? Oh, stands the church clock at 2:50, and is there honey still for tea?"
"Honey's off there."
Yes, I recognise Honey's off. Yes, that
yes.
Is, that's a quote from Rupert Brooke, am I right?
Well, Rupert Brooke, Grantchester, as you say, and is there honey still to tea?
Now, but before let me... that...
Yes, what quills mute inglorious lie buried here? That is what C. Quill Smith wrote. Where did he steal it from?
I don't know. I think you should put it back wherever you...
Where would we put it back? Arthur?
No.
It's Gray's Elegy again. Some mute, inglorious Milton here may rest. Right, well, I think you get one mark for that. Muir and Norton were the people who wrote that sketch, Peter Sellers delivering it. Anna Ford, can you unscramble this quotation and tell me where it comes from?
If you have ears, prepare to shed them now.
Well, I think the original is Shakespeare. And yes. It's Caesar.
The play is Caesar. The speaker is...
Antony.
Yes, Mark Antony.
Mark Antony. If you have ears, prepare to shed them now. I mean, that sounds very Van Goghian.
The original words are...
If you have eyes, prepare to... Tears.
Oh, yes. They're miming the
if
clue
you have
now.
Tears or eyes or something
if you have
like that,
tears, prepare to shed them now.
Absolutely, yes.
Arthur Marshall, I'd like you to listen to Alan Price singing this song from the film Oh Lucky Man and straighten out the quotation contained in it right at the very beginning.
Hope springs eternal in a young man's breast, and he dreams of a better life ahead.
What he sang was, hope springs eternal in a young man's breast.
I think it must be hope springs eternal in the savage breast. Or is it the savage beast? Savage breast.
No.
It's not an, if you'll pardon the indelicacy, a maiden's breast.
No, it's...
Good.
A human breast. Hope springs eternal in the human breast. Man never is, but always to be blessed. From Pope's essay on man. Right. We bring the proceedings to a close this week, as on a previous occasion, by asking the panel to choose a real, if somewhat bizarre, quotation with which to begin a sermon or a speech. And mercifully, we don't ask them to complete the sermon or speech. But, Terry Wogan, what have you got?
Well, in the course of a program I do... in the morning, there is a thing called pause for thought, and we sometimes get vicars who see God as something of a comedian. But this chap was coming to the end of his speech, in fact, at the very end. He'd been talking about God being a great prankster. And he said, you know, he said, I always think of God as a rather large Harry Secom. And the classic one, the classic Irish one, is this parish priest who said, and never forget, my brethren, he said, that no matter how hard life is, and how tough it seems to be, and how insurmountable the difficulties, remember this, God never closes one door, but he shuts another.
Ford.
Well, I was brought up in a vicarage, so I feel I have the edge on the rest of you. Having sat through, certainly until my late teens, a very large number of sermons, there was the wonderful parson who started his sermon once with, Dear God, as you will have undoubtedly read in the Leader of the Times this morning. There's also the advice given to young curates by the head of a theological college, which was, remember the head can only take in what the bottom can stand. But I think having sat through so many sermons, that my text for a sermon would be taken from a woman called Philander Chase Johnson, who only died in 1939, and that would be, cheer up, the worst is yet to come.
Ian McKellen. Is yours a sermon or a speech?
Mine's a sermon, too, and this is a text I found for a sermon I must admit I now quite like to hear, but it's an inauspicious text, I think. It's from Psalm 60, verse 8. Moab is my washpot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. Moab is my washpot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. Perhaps I was on my way to the pulpit this evening.
Ronald Thatcher, you've got one, haven't you?
Yeah, I got one which was sent in by Mr. A.R. Young of Edinburgh. I'd rather like to start a sermon with this, I think. He quotes the evangelist who said, "Would you rather be in the light with the wise virgins or in the dark with the foolish ones?"
Arthur Marshall.
There's one from, this is a sermon, one from somebody called Sidney Smith. And it goes, "Pity poor bishops. How can a bishop marry? How can he flirt? The most he can say is, I will see you in the vestry after the service." And there's a lovely one from Saki, H.H. Munro. "Oysters are more beautiful than any religion. There's nothing in Christianity or Buddhism that quite matches the sympathetic unselfishness of an oyster."
Well, while we await the sermon, thank you very much, panel. And it's, this is the end of the program for this week, I'm afraid. Let me give you the score. And the outright and supreme winner this week is Terry Wogan. And we leave you with this favourite quotation sent in by Mrs. M. Webber of Amersham, who was worried that it may be a bit out of date because it was told to her brother by a stranger in a bus queue in Harrogate in 1923. This is a riposte at an encounter between the Lord Chief Justice, Lord Hewitt, and F.E. Smith, Lord Birkenhead. F.E. Smith tapped Lord Hewitt on his fat stomach and said,
"What's he going to be, eh? A boy or a girl?"
And Lord Hewitt replied,
"I don't know. If it's a boy, I'll call him John. If it's a girl, I'll call her Mary. But if, as I suspect, it's only wind, I'll call it F.E. Smith."
Goodbye.